The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
So glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off. Our web address, Clark.com. When you have a question, Clark.com/ask. Coming up in today's Clarkrageous moment, retailers are doing something really, really clever that's ripping off our wallets big time, and we're helping them do it. I'm going to tell you what it is and how to avoid trouble with your spending. And coming up in a half hour, there's more change going on with cars right now in a very short period of time than we've had in decades. I'm going to tell you, if you are someone who's interested in cars, maybe thinking of buying one, you need to know the trends and how those trends could be your friend or your enemy when you're shopping for new wheels. We'll talk right now about something that is your enemy right now, and that's with the low investment returns we have and we may have for years in a slow growth economy here and overseas. The costs of the investments you go into, that's the most important factor for you to look at in terms of how much money you'll end up with over time. I shared with you months ago clear, convincing math, of which there's no gray, that if you were saving money for retirement in low-cost choices versus even average-cost choices, that in retirement you end up with 40% more money, 40% to spend in retirement just from what it costs for the expenses you pay to be in those investments. And most people have no idea what the expenses are of what they're in. But I want to share with you new data that was put out by one of the Wall Street research outfits, S&P, that finds that if you go in low-cost investment choices, like index funds, that you will beat the normal cost index funds and what return you're going to have just a hair under 90% of the time, back-tested over the last 10 years or a year or most any time period you look at, you end up with much, much more money avoiding even moderate cost investment choices. Today, it's never been less expensive. I mean, not even close to as cheap as it is right now to put money into investments inside an IRA, a Roth, inside a traditional investment account, because when you put money in a mutual fund or something like that, you pay a management fee each year for the organizer of the fund putting that fund together and choosing what investments to be in and all that. So historically, a mid-price fund was somewhere around 1%. Today, the low-cost choices are 1/20th to 1/10th of that. Now, you may not think it really matters that much over time whether you're paying 1% or 1/10th of 1%. But I'm telling you, over the years, that difference, that obscure issue, what you're paying in management expenses, makes an enormous difference in what you make. And then you add on top of it that 90% of the time, the traditional investment choices that somebody makes will not even perform as well as just buying like all the big stocks in the country or something like that. It was an index fund. So it's a double whammy when you pay even average expenses to somebody who's trying to outrun the market. You fall behind twice, and so does your future. Shane is with us. Shane, you're going to buy a home?
That's correct, Clark.
Congratulations.
Thanks. How are you doing?
Great, thank you. Hope you are.
Yes.
So how can I be of service? Is this a first home you're buying or a subsequent home?
Well, it's actually our second. We own our home currently, and we're trying to sell it, and we'd like to purchase something else upon selling this house.
Okay. And are you going to make money on the sale of the home you're in now, or are you just going to get out with the shirt on your back?
Well, we're hoping to actually come out with some money. We purchased it for $210. We owe like $196 on it now, and our listing agent recommended that we list it for $259. So we're hoping to have a bit of a margin there of profit. That's what we're hoping for anyway. We'll see.
Right. You'll know when you have the buyer who comes to the closing table.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So we've only had the house on the market for a week. We've had some people come take a look at it, and they seem pretty interested, so we'll see what happens. But my question for you, Clark, is I know you can't recommend any institutions specifically, but what advice could you offer as far as pursuing our next loan?
I'm ready. You ready?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the first thing you eliminate are the four biggest banks in the country. Don't even think about going to one of them for a mortgage.
Okay.
They are, by their own admission, marking loans up by many, many, many thousands of dollars effectively, maybe in the tens of thousands of dollars in cost to you over the life of a loan versus what you're charged at a smaller local or even regional bank, what you'll pay if you go through a mortgage broker, or what you'd pay going to a credit union, or as the last option, an online lender.
Okay.
Pretty much it's one of those, all of the above, except for the biggest banks.
Okay.
What happens is because the biggest banks have such a brand name, people naturally default to going to them and not realize that you're paying a huge amount more for a mortgage loan with one of them than you would elsewhere.
I see.
So if you've used a mortgage broker in the past for the one you did in 2010, call him or her. If you used a credit union for that loan, call him or her. Online, although for purchase of homes, I prefer you deal with a human rather than an online lender. I think online lenders are great for refis. I think there's more risk involved in using an online lender for a loan to purchase a home.
Okay, yeah. I don't think I'm allowed to say any names on the show, but my wife has done some research with some online companies, and we were going to send off our information and see what they could do. We really wanted to go with a credit union to stay local.
But not just a credit union. On a mortgage, going to a smaller local bank is very valuable. But okay. You don't do just one of them, Shane. You do multiple, because people tend to go to one person or one place for a mortgage. And other things we do, we shop all over the place.
Right, right.
And a mortgage is perhaps the most expensive obligation we take on in our lives. So shopping around is great. And I'd like for you to set up an online file or just a simple sheet of paper where when you get quotes on three things: the interest rate, the closing costs, and if you're going to have to pay any what are known as points. Each point is 1% of the amount of money you're borrowing, so that you as best as possible can figure out which loan offer is your best deal.
Okay.
And if the two of you checked your credit to see if everything looks okay on your credit?
See, that's one question that I had in this process is we believe in shopping around on everything, and my fear was, do we have to run our credit every time we go to see one of these people, or can we just
Great question. Yes, but all mortgage applications done in a one-month period are treated as a single inquiry for a mortgage.
Oh, okay.
Because the credit scoring people know that nobody's going out buying 10 properties at once or 8 properties at once. Only somebody who'd be loco would be doing that. So they treat all those inquiries as a single inquiry. You are not punished for shopping. You're rewarded with better rates and better costs. Good luck. I hope that home of yours sells. Our number is 877-87-CLARK. Henry is with us right now. And Henry, congratulations are in order. Is that correct?
That's true, Clark. My wife and I had our first child a couple months ago, and I'm looking at setting up some type of a savings account for her to be used in the future, and I'm wondering what would be the best route to go.
Well, congratulations. What did you name her?
Riley.
And is Riley a genius?
So far.
Okay, because I just need to know, because the reason I'm asking if she's really smart is, do you have the feeling that Riley's going to college 18 years from now?
I'm not sure about that. I would kind of like the account that I'd set up to be possibly used for that, but maybe not necessarily only that would be the only possibility in the event that she would choose to not do that.
Okay. Let me explain why I asked that question, why I phrased it that way. Because for a kid, the most effective way to save money for a child is in a college account. The reason is that college accounts are tax-free if used for college. All the money in the account, all that it earns, all flows tax-free, which makes them so much better than the other options that have tax involved.
Okay.
But a child can go a pretty long way earning money each year before what a child has is taxable or any significant amount of tax. So if college is not the scoop, if that's not what you're really interested in, how much money do you want to put aside for Riley?
Well, right now, I think we're looking at $1,000.
Oh, you're my hero!
I
started to type on my computer here, and my fingers left the ivory. You know why?
Why is that?
Because there is a perfect account to open for Riley for $1,000.
Okay.
And it is called the Vanguard Star.
Vanguard
Star.
Okay.
The Star is an ingenious investment account. In one account that requires the $1,000 minimum to open, you have Riley's money diversified. I mean, you're not going to believe what a mogul Riley will become. Riley will have money in all the big and medium-sized companies pretty much across the United States, will have money invested overseas, will have money invested in bonds, which is where she's kind of like the banker lending money to people. It is a phenomenally clever, single offering, diversified financial portfolio, all with one account you open with one amount of money, $1,000. And here's the other thing, Henry, you are allowed to add to Riley's account as you wish through the years.
That's what I was just going to ask you next.
So once you have the grand in there, is you want to put more money there for her, you can. It's beautiful. Yeah. Now, if you will go to Vanguard.com, and there will be a thing to research funds, just type in the word star. And the information will come up on it. Now, if you are opening an account for yourself, you would be able to open it completely online. All you'll be able to do, because you'll be opening what's known as a custodial account for her, is you can fill in the application on your computer screen, but you have to print it out, sign it, and mail it in.
Okay.
Does Riley have a Social Security number yet?
Yep.
Great. You're in.
Cool.
Perfect choice for her. That's great you have the grand. And again, congratulations on the birth of your daughter.
Here on the Clark Howard Show, the Clarkrageous moment is all about you knowing ways that you can avoid getting ripped off. I want you to have an early warning of ways that people pick your pocket. I have a really bizarre one for you right now, a way that you are throwing away so much money, you can't stand it.
Scams, ripoffs, outrages. It's a Clarkrageous moment.
I am the dullest man alive, but I'm as dull as I am to help you have a more interesting life yourself, at least free up more money in your life. So I read a long-form story in the Harvard Business Review about how manufacturers and retailers are tricking you to pay much more money for items you buy of their brands or in their stores. And the hip-in thing now, with both the product manufacturers and the retailers, is what's known as PPA, which stands for price pack architecture. And what it means is if you look in the stores now, there's a big emphasis on having smaller sized items that look like you're getting them for less money. But when you figure out what you're paying per unit, per ounce, whatever it is, the cost you're paying goes up 50%, 100%, 200%, whatever. Retailers and manufacturers have become adept at trying to convince you that buying the smaller size of something is much, much better for you. Well, let me tell you, it's much better for them and rotten for you. I shake my head when I go into any of the national drugstore chains and I see all their convenience size items that if you figure out what they cost per unit per ounce, the cost is so high that you're paying typically five times per unit of measurement what you would buying a traditional sized item. And this is spreading to all kinds of product areas. Coca-Cola has made their stockholders exceedingly happy, giddy, with the success they've had with the new miniaturized soft drink cans, where people are paying a little less per can for the miniatures, but when you look per ounce, people are paying a frightfully high amount. So know the tricks of the trade. Know that you and I are being played by the retailers and the manufacturers. And the smaller sizes are actually a curse to your wallet, not a blessing. And that's Clark Rageous.
Season 2 of some inspiring podcasts from Forbes is now on Podcast One. First, if you worry that you're not the type who could succeed in starting and running a business because you're not an extrovert, hiding in the bathroom with Maura Ahrens-Mealy will change your mind. And maybe your life. Then, Forbes contributor, author, and entrepreneur Denise Rastori invites you into her New York City apartment to tap into her conversations with successful women who are sharing some mentoring moments. And finally, hosts Christina Wallace and Kate Scott Campbell will blow the doors off traditional one-career thinking and prove to you that the limit does not exist. Get inspired and download all three shows now on the Podcast One app, iTunes, or at podcastone.com.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery. Grow your contact list and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
I'm glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. Our web address, clark.com. Got a question, clark.com/ask. I just want to tell you how grateful I am to all the people who take a moment when I'm out and about to thank me for the new Clark.com. Our team on the web works really hard to try to bring you information that can help you take more control of your wallet and your financial future. And, you know, it's a dynamic thing with the web. We may not always hit the target perfectly for you, but let me tell you, we're working as hard as we can to provide you the information that cuts through the clutter of everyday life so you can take charge of your wallet. I'm a big believer in the trends that technology is bringing our way that I believe are going to make driving so much safer and cheaper for us. But let's deal with cheaper for a second. GM, the people that own Chevrolet, Buick, Cadillac, GMC trucks, did I miss any divisions? GM has a product called Maven, or a service called Maven, that they've been rolling out city by city. Of course, they started it in Detroit because that's where they're based. But now they've got it in Chicago, Boston, Washington, New York. And it will steadily expand to cities around the country. And now they're experimenting with very, very, very affordable one-way transportation using the Maven service. How cheap? Let me give you an example. Saw this in a story in the Detroit News. So let's say you take an Uber from a business park in Detroit out to the airport. It costs you around $25. You take a cab, about $45. Instead, you're the driver. You use a Maven car. It'll cost you $3.50. Because a lot of the cost when you go with any car service or a taxi is for the labor for the driver, right? Driver's got to earn a living. But the whole idea of having cars that you have access to rather than having the expense of owning a car, there are tens of millions of Americans already today who would do better being a subscriber to something like Zipcar rather than having your own car, because vehicles cost a fortune. I gave an example the other day on the air. Somebody buying a car at 0% interest, buying an average price car, would have a monthly car payment with no down payment of $700-something a month at 0%. Cars are phenomenally expensive. And that's why things like GM's Maven, that I hope continues to do well and expands around the country, make a difference. But ultimately, the thing's going to be the self-driving cars, the automated cars. So there's a new survey out about that that Kelley Blue Book did that found that people overwhelmingly don't believe that vehicles are going to be available that are fully self-driving in their lifetime. Two-thirds of people, approximately, even a third of people who are teenagers, can't picture that there will be completely self-driving vehicles in their lifetime. But the funny thing is that people who've been in as a passenger in a vehicle that even has semi-autonomous driving to it, like the Tesla, some of the Mercedes, that will in certain conditions drive themselves, once somebody's experienced it, nearly 100% of people who've experienced it see the future in their lifetime of being self-driving, totally autonomous, automated self-driving. And the cost of transportation will go down so much, and the terrible loss of lives we have each year, roughly 35 to 40,000 people dying in car wrecks every year, that number is going to shrink and shrink and shrink. And I know when we're busy with our lives, we don't always see the changes coming. This is coming much quicker than you think. Kevin's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing, Clark?
Great, thank you. Kevin, you want to talk about rental property.
Well, yes. My wife and I have an opportunity. We're looking at a rental condo in the Gulf Coast and kind of playing back and forth the options of financing this versus actually paying cash for it. So I've heard you in the past talk about you've had some experience with condo vacation rental, so I just thought I'd run it up the flagpole with you.
You must have just been listening to a conversation we had during a commercial break a few minutes ago. I was talking about one of my condos. So if you're sitting with cash that's idle that is not serving another purpose in your life, writing the check, I think, is a smart idea.
Mm-hmm.
I know that people that are professional real estate investors roll their eyes when I say this, but you have lower costs in acquisition if you just pay by check. And you also have the potential of better negotiating power with a seller when they know that it's a cash deal and they don't have to worry about a loan contingency or financing falling through.
Mm-hmm.
So What do you do with the cash right now? How's it being used? How's it functioning in your life?
Well, it's not functioning real well, actually.
So it's earning a fraction of 1%?
That's absolutely right.
So if you pay cash for this condo, what money would you have for a rainy day?
We would still have significant finances available.
Pay cash.
Mm-hmm.
I see no upside. You know, when you have it as a rental property, you'll be depreciating the property.
Mm-hmm.
Based on your acquisition price, you'll depreciate it over, 30 years now, 27.5, whatever it is. And the additional, the interest you'd be paying would also potentially be a deduction for you. But who cares? The deduction isn't as valuable as you not having to pay a mortgage payment. If you were able on a investment property to borrow at, let's say, what is it, 4.5?
Mm-hmm, probably.
All right, so you borrow at 4.5, which is a great deal, by the way, historically. You can borrow at 4.5, or you can earn a fraction of 1% on the money sitting in savings.
You know, we also noticed that going to a lot of vendors or finance people, that when you mentioned vacation rentals in Florida, they kind of want to hang up the phone.
Exactly. So, and also, it's a Florida vacation property. Did I miss that up front? Because the other thing with Florida is that if you take out a loan on a property when you buy it, there's additional tax that you have to pay the state of Florida that you avoid if you just write a check.
Uh-huh.
So for lots of reasons, it's best to write that check.
Well, I appreciate the info.
One other thing with any property in a state like Florida that's had so much disruption, make sure you buy an owner's title insurance policy.
Okay.
Which protects your interests in the event that your full legal ownership of that property was ever challenged.
Would that be done prior to or after closing?
Prior to.
Okay.
So congratulations, and I hope you make a lot of money.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Clark.
Sure. Pam is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Clark. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. Good to have you here.
I'm from California, and I have a 16-year-old niece who lives in Colorado, and she just started her first W-2 job. And I was wondering if I were to give her some money to put into a Roth IRA, would that limit her ability to get financial aid?
It will not, because retirement assets are not calculated, because under the law, they're not supposed to be withdrawn until after age 59 and a half. So you would be the most generous aunt ever to do this.
Well, I think it would help teach her the time value of money. And I think if I would have known that when I was 16, I would have been much better off than learning it like when I was 30.
Well, 30 is still good to have learned about money. But Pam, I'll tell you something I did with my now 25-year-old. When she had her first job working as a hostess in a restaurant when she was 15, I offered her what I call the daddy match. That every dollar she saved from her job at the restaurant, I matched with a dollar in her Roth.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing something like that, and I don't know how I'm going to structure it yet.
Because if you don't have her put in any of her own money, I don't think she will appreciate it as if she has some what they call skin in the game.
Right, right. I was going to make the agreement with her too that she can't take this money out. You know how you can take out the contributions, just not the interest.
Right.
So I wanted to make the deal with her. She can't take at least my contributions out.
Well, that would be only a promise made in honor.
Right.
She would not have to honor her word on it.
Yeah.
And again, that's why it even pays more to have her chip in some money.
Yeah, no, that's really good advice, and because the whole idea is just to teach her the time value of money, and you know, starting at such a young age, how beneficial that could be for her.
So, if you decide to do it where you fund all the money in it, if you end up making that decision, the best thing to do is you be the custodian of her Roth, and you have the mailing address be your address.
Okay.
And then it kind of leaves her mind between 16 and 18 or 19, that money's even there.
Right, right.
So it is a good, honest deception when you put money in an investment account for the benefit of a minor child, that you keep as little knowledge about it and reminders of it present in their life, unless they are very active adding money to it. But you also have to know your niece's personality. And if your niece
developing, you know, I think she can make good choices, but, you know, when you're so young, and especially when you're a girl, you just want to buy things.
Girls just want to have fun, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's so sweet of you to do this, and it's something that I hope she has the maturity to really appreciate what a kind, kind person you are, Pam. Heidi is with us. Heidi, you want to cut the cord from the cable company.
I do.
What's the story?
Well, you know, every 2 years it seems I have to switch from one to the other. We have basically two kind of big companies in our area, and they offer the phone and the cable and the internet bundles. And so, you know, you get it at one price, and then, you know, within the 2 years it's jacked up, you know, nearly 100%. And then you have to switch to the other cable company to get the deal. And so every 2 years we're switching.
I love that. That makes you smart. Seriously.
I should not have to do that.
Yeah, but that's what they're counting on. You know, the way the cable companies work and the satellite companies work is they punish you for loyalty and reward you for disloyalty.
Right.
And so it's like the cell phone companies. You know, if you go with AT&T or Verizon, and if you're a new customer, they offer you these fantastic deals. If you're an existing customer, who are you? So that's why doing the switch every 2 years is brilliant.
Yeah. I just didn't know. I mean, we've considered getting rid of our cable and just, or trying to, you know, source it differently so that we can just have, you know, even three providers that we don't have to change. But I don't know if that exists out there.
Well, you know, there, if you do cut the cord and you get TV by like Netflix, and you get TV by Hulu Plus, and you get TV from maybe Amazon, you can cut your bill down to like $25 a month and then use an antenna for the local channels.
Yeah, or even like I guess the internet takes care of it, but even like a live news channel, you wouldn't really be able to get on those, right?
Only your locals.
Local, yeah.
So if you do consume, how much pay TV do you think you consume a day?
You know, we only watch, I'd say, an hour to 2 hours max, and it's usually my kids with shows or something maybe we recorded.
Well, you could try it. Unbundle, disconnect the pay television portion, maybe even go to one of the cheaper phone services I talk about. Use Netflix and Hulu and see if everybody can live with it. If they are, the experiment will save you a lot of money.
And David is with us. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing, Clark?
Great. I understand the FBI is talking to you. I hope you're not in too much trouble.
About 3 days ago, it said that it has come to their attention through the intelligence monitoring network system that I have been doing an illegal transaction with some imposters claiming to be Professor So-and-so of Bank So-and-so of Nigeria, and the list goes on. And then it comes down to next, it says that, however, they have contacted Federal Minister of Finance and brought this thing to a solution, and that I am due a payment of $800,000.
David.
Yeah.
Take the $800,000 and get a better phone line. Your phone line's awful.
Yeah.
But anyway, David,
so
that is funny. So these people are telling you that as a result of this huge FBI investigation, you're suddenly due all this money.
Yeah.
You know how bogus this is, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, that is, I'll tell you, that's a new angle, because the other angles we've had is where people have been asked to assist the FBI in an investigation and to receive money, of which you'll get to keep a meaningful portion in return for helping the FBI. And so it's just as phony as could be, and I'm so glad you got the humor in it.
Man,
you didn't give him any $200, did you?
No, but what I
Well, that is, I will tell you, that's the smallest amount of money I've ever heard of the crooks asking for in one of these elaborate schemes. I would bet you that's just the beginning. Thanks for tipping me off, David.
You know, when you're going to buy a car, pricing information is great and necessary. But there's more to doing it than just the price. There's the actual buying experience. If you want to enjoy a better one, you should go to a True Car certified dealer. They're there to help you find the car that you want, and they're also what make True Car unique. With True Car, you can connect with a local certified dealer that you choose, so you can lock in a guaranteed savings off the MSRP and enjoy a totally better buying experience. And by better, they also mean faster. Over 2 million cars have already been sold to True Car users who have visited their True Car certified dealer. And there are over 11,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide, so it's probably pretty easy to find one near you. And check this, for a new car, average True Car users save $3,279 off MSRP. Alright, so you're probably wondering, how do I do this? It's easy, just go to TrueCar.com or, right there on your phone, download the True Car app. You can find the car you want, see the True Car pricing curve, which shows you what other people in your area paid for the same car, and that way you can know you're getting a good price and feel confident. Then you'll get a guaranteed savings certificate from the True Car certified dealer. Go to the dealer, and your guaranteed savings off MSRP will be honored, and you enjoy a quick, easy experience. How's that for car buying? So when you're ready to buy a new car, or even a used one, visit TrueCar.com or download the True Car app and enjoy the better car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
I'm so glad you joined us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you and your wallet. I hope you learn ideas from me that'll help you keep more of what you make on the web at Clark.com. If you have a question for me, Clark.com/ask. So, we have a clear mission on our show. I just told you, to help you keep more of what you make. Saving more, spending less. And I give you advice, guidance, that I believe is the right information. But I'm just a guy. And I'm going to mess up. And when I mess up, it's important that we set the record straight. And that's why I want you to be there to guard the truth. That when I'm out of line, that you let me know. And that's why we have the Clark Stinks message board, where you can let me know that you feel I came up short, or that I disappointed you, or let you down. You post your opinion. Others can read it. Others can add to it. Others can disagree with it. And then weekly, our producer, Krista, goes through your posts and shares the fun ones. Is it fun ones? How do you decide? Call them fun ones?
No, just whatever ones are short enough for me to read.
Yeah, don't write a short story. But anyway, she'll share your advice to me right here, right now.
I should have never encouraged you to speak.
You must think I'm pretty stupid.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, pal.
So what you got?
All right. Well, this person says, actually, her name is Stacy. I love how techie you are at heart, but every time you say the techies recommend AVG and Avast, I reach for my gas mask. While this was true many years ago, it is no longer the case. AVG now borders on malware itself. Avast has been exposed for messing with root certificates, which is a security no-no. Please stop recommending these two products. As of today, the best free antivirus software comes directly from Microsoft. I'm a Microsoft-certified enterprise desktop support technician, and this is the AV I run on my computers and the AV I put on my clients' home computers. Computer safety begins with the user. No antivirus software in the world will stop an end user from doing foolish things online. Think of your antivirus as a seatbelt. It's great when someone crashes into you, but it won't stop you from driving your car off a cliff. Signed, your friendly neighborhood deodorizer, Stacy.
Thank you, Stacy. Stacy, you are the second person recently who recommended the Microsoft product, and I thought we have that on our guide. I'll make sure we have it on free and cheap. As for your unhappiness with Avast and AVG, I looked at those, not based on what you said, but something that came up also recently, and they both appeared to have solid good ratings still. So I can't disagree with you, though, because as I've told you, I'm a techno idiot.
All right. I never thought I would have a reason.
Let me stop, Krista. We do have the Microsoft Security Essentials is our top free antivirus protection on our free and cheap.
Great. I never thought I'd have a reason to post anything to the Clark Stinks board, but today you gave me one. I'm a payroll manager, and we issue pay cards to individuals that do not have bank accounts for direct deposit. I use one myself so that I can monitor the process. I do not know what banks you're talking about, but there are no fees associated with our payroll card unless the user inputs their PIN for a purchase, but not for an ATM withdrawal. They can avoid the 50-cent charge by using it as a credit transaction instead. Federal regulations require that the employee be able to receive all of their money at one time if they desire. We can do that by going to the bank branch, using Western Union, or cashing it via checks that are included with the account. Most banks charge by the number of transactions. We average $8 per live check issued per month and $4 each for a direct deposit. I issue an average of 3,350 deposits per month by issuing pay cards because it would be the same cost as direct deposit as opposed to the cost of issuing and dealing with live checks. You are usually right, so I can only assume that you got your information from someone who has not used the system correctly. Keep up the good work, Clark and team. We need you.
I appreciate that post because that's a whole different perspective. The payroll card that you're using at your firm is obviously not feeing people to death. You said something. You said that you're paying $4 per employee. A lot of the cards that rip off the employees give the employer a $0 cost for issuing payroll on a payroll card, and then at the back end, clobber the employees with charges for everything except maybe breathing.
Diane says, I'm responding to Clark's request for Clark Stinks. Free trade has decimated our economy. Factories are empty. There are few jobs. My daughter is a college graduate from an honors program, a four-year program. Entry-level minimum wage, sending out applications continuously with no luck. Same for the majority of her friends. No benefits, and many of them have multiple part-time jobs and live at home at age 25 to 26. They are discouraged. This is a common story of my coworkers also. How has free trade helped? Where are the jobs? Overseas.
I feel terrible about what your daughter's going through. And there has been a real problem ever since 08 with underemployment of college graduates. That has truly started to turn around. And if your daughter has been discouraged, I would encourage her to be out looking for work again. On the question of sending in resumes, not hearing, when you send in a resume to a company, the odds that that's going to lead to anything other than discouragement are overwhelming. Jobs are found through direct contact with employers who then might ask for a resume or an application. And people hire people. They don't hire resumes. On the issue of free trade, it's one of the most difficult topics I ever address on the show because when a factory closes, when people lose their jobs, and as best you can tell, those jobs went to Mexico or went to China or went wherever in the world, all you feel, all you see is the loss of those jobs. But the United States is the largest manufacturer in the world today. The change has not been about foreign trade. It's been about automation in the factories where they produce a far higher number of goods with a teensy tiny workforce than before. The real problem has been high tech, far more than anything that might have happened from foreign trade.
I'm an attorney. I heard Clark tell a woman that she should obtain a term life insurance policy, make her 17-year-old and her 6-year-old beneficiaries, and leave the 19-year-old off because the woman felt the 19-year-old could fend for herself. That advice is calculated to cause irreparable harm among the children. The advice should have been to have the policy payable to a discretionary trust held until the youngest is at least 21 and to take into account the money paid by the mother for the older children, et cetera, et cetera. Dennis.
Dennis, you're right. After I took that call, I really thought about that one and I didn't like the way I answered it. I should have advised the necessity of a trust with minor children. And just dismissing out of hand the any needs for the 19-year-old, I was wrong.
Jeff says, I usually agree with the information Clark gives to his listeners, and I love the way you're always trying to help. But in the case of term life insurance, you are not entirely correct. While it is true that insurance salesmen make less on long-term policies than on whole life ones, there are agents who make a career out of selling term policies. You also suggested that the term might be bought online. I strongly disagree with this.
Well, I need to thank you for being willing to sell level term insurance, because what I hear from agents is that the expression I've used on the air came from an agent. The agent said, I can't afford the gas to go talk to somebody about selling them a term life policy because the commission I'll earn is less than the cost of the gas. And so there's such a strong desire to sell what the insurance agents call permanent insurance because they have an enormous commission stream. And if you buy online, you're able in just a very short period of time, now even with one website where you can buy without even going through a health screening, buy insurance where you can buy it almost immediately. And so I am a fan of term life insurance, obviously, and I think it's fine for somebody to buy a policy online. And the reason I feel so strongly about that is that you're different than most agents that when they get before somebody, they're going to be doing everything they can to convince them not to buy term, which for 90-some-odd% of people is the right purchase.
All right. The last line in this one is just some constructive criticism from a longtime listener. Okay. So now
why'd
I'll read
you read
the post.
Why'd you read
make
that
sure
last?
You know that they're a long-term listener just trying to help.
Okay.
Clark, love your show. However, at times when you start off a segment, you just go on and on over a subject you want to emphasize. Case in point, 3D printers. After listening to your long-winded tirade on 3D printers for about 10-plus minutes the other day, I had enough and turned you off. Take my word for it, my friend. Most of us are not as feeble-minded as you may think. We do get it without your belaboring anything to exhaustion. And then just some constructive criticism from a long-time listener.
No, I appreciate that. In fact, it's because of feedback from you and fellow listeners that when I do what we call a pod, InfoPod, which generally opens a half hour, we have dramatically shortened those. And if you want to put me to a stopwatch, you'll find that they generally are around the 4-minute mark. We know based on history that that's the amount of information you want to digest with me just going as you posted on and on.
Clark, where do you buy your flip-flops? Take a lesson from John Kerry and wear regular shoes. 1 week investing in your own house isn't helpful financially. The next week, the most important thing to become a millionaire is buying your own home and staying in it. P.S. A short weekly segment on the very best CD rates in the USA would be nice for the less risky investors. Thanks, a regular listener.
Okay, you got to help me, Krista. I didn't understand the flip-flop.
I think what they're saying is, like, 1 week you're saying that you might not be able to do well financially if you're by buying a house. Like, you shouldn't buy a house as an investment. And then another week you're saying, hold your house forever.
Oh, okay. So a house is a great inflation hedge. Because if you buy a house, you stay in one house for a long time, you don't buy too extravagant of a house, that you fix the cost of your housing, ultimately you extinguish most of the cost of your housing because you eventually end up mortgage debt free.
The study that Clark reported on his October 13th show was very basic and only used one fitness tracker. When it comes to fitness trackers, there are many variables. Comfort and style equals willingness to wear it. Software and features equal willingness to use it. Social aspect equals accountability. Just like a bicycle, running shoes, or a swimming pool, it is not the device that is good or bad. It's the user's experience and attitude toward the fitness tracker that determines how it is used. I have no financial conflicts of interest to disclose. However, I wear a Misfit Shine 2 that I won in a contest from Misfit. Gabriel Brooks.
Gabriel, thank you. I was basically making fun of myself with that pod, that what you said is completely true. It's the motivation of the user that matters so much. The study I was talking about is one that found that people who wear fitness trackers may actually become less healthy than other people who don't wear one. And if you want to see more about that, you can see it at Clark.com. Appreciate your posts. Want to hear more from you? Go to Clark.com and let me know how I stink. Maria is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Maria.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you, Maria. How can I be of service?
Well, I'm hoping you can clear up a confusion that I hear mixed messages about all the time, and that is, which is safer to use, not only at a gas station, but at the regular stores where you're purchasing things and running your card through? Someone told me this morning that the kind of machines they have, say, at, you know, the normal stores where they're connected to the computer and you don't always even sign, you shouldn't use your credit card, but you should use your debit card because you have to put the PIN in. And then at the gas station, apparently it's safer to use a credit card. I'm really confused.
Yeah, I can clear that up for you and you'll feel no confusion at all.
Okay.
Right, so where people do get confused is with a debit card. They'll ask you debit or credit because you can pretend a debit card is a credit card, but it's really not.
I know.
But a real credit card versus a debit card, a credit card is far, far safer for you to use. It's not even with any gray there. A traditional credit card where they send you a bill
right.
for you to pay is much, much better to use. Unless you just can't handle, if you have a credit card, you'll spend yourself into oblivion.
No, not at all. But
let me tell you why a credit card is so much better.
All right.
Let's say the number gets compromised and a criminal starts running up charges on the credit card. What happens?
Yeah, I call my credit card company and I tell them these aren't my charges.
Right. And no money has left your hands, right?
Right. That's
well, with a debit card, what I call a piece of trash, fake Visa or fake MasterCard. If somebody gets the number or gets the card or whatever and they start using it, what happens is money disappears from your checking account. You could have checks bouncing all over the place.
Yeah.
And you then have to fight with your bank to get your own money put back in your account.
Okay.
So also with a credit card, the law is very clear on a series of rights you have with a credit card. Let's say you buy something online or you buy something like travel before you're going to go. With a credit card, you have rights to dispute it if the goods are never delivered or if the cruise line goes bust or whatever. But with a debit card, you don't have any of those rights.
Okay.
So in so many ways, a credit card is overwhelmingly superior to a debit card. And again, the only exception is if somebody knows that they can't handle credit.
Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans proudly supports this podcast. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. You see, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? Well, with Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. It helps you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/save. That's quickenloans.com/save. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Stay tuned for 60 seconds of AP News headlines right after this podcast.
Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to save more, spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. Most of all, don't rip yourself off. I'm about to give an example of how, out of convenience, we cost ourselves big money. You want to know ways to handle your money better? Stretch each dollar? Go to Clark.com. Have a question, Clark.com/ask. And if you're not aware or you've forgotten, we provide free off-the-air advice 9 hours each weekday. This is a free service of the Clark Howard Show since 1993. You can see how to call in and talk with a member of our team. You go to Clark.com. Hours listed as well. All right, so I said just a second ago, there's something we're doing that rips us off. And it's something, you know, humans are creatures of habit. We develop a pattern, and we follow that pattern. I saw an item in Business Week that 55% of the time when you're looking for an item online, that 55% of the time people start at Amazon. Amazon's a great platform. But if price matters, Amazon's not it. I buy from Amazon, not a lot. I don't buy like a lot of people do, obviously, because I'm so price sensitive. And there will be occasions where I'll get a better deal at Amazon. That happened recently. I needed 9-volt batteries. And Amazon has a line, I think they call it Basics. And the 9-volt batteries at Amazon were much cheaper than they were at other online sellers and much cheaper than the 9-volt batteries were at Costco or Sam's. Because the warehouse clubs, to me, they're the gold standard. But they had a deal on their private label Basics batteries, and I bought them. But I am a fierce comparison shopper. But if you're not wired that way, and it's so easy, especially if you're a Prime member, to go on Amazon's website and just buy, just go there first, 55% of the time, you go there, you load an item in your cart, you do the one-click checkout, bam! And they have the psychology so well wrapped up that a day later or 2 days later, the item shows up, free shipping. By the way, do you know what it actually costs Amazon to send an item to you? I just read in one of the financial publications I read. All right, now I got two big Amazon shoppers here. When you order something on Amazon Prime, who wants to go first, Joel or Krista?
I'll let Krista go first. Ladies first.
I was just going to say Joel does, but okay.
How much do you think it costs? So you order whatever. You order this set of headphones, let's say.
Right.
And you order it from Prime. Free shipping. Free 2-day delivery. Some items free 1-day delivery. What does it cost them to get that headphone to you?
$2.
Joel, what do you think?
I'd say $1.25.
$7.50 approximately.
What?
Yep.
So you just ordered on sale some great headphones yesterday for $7.
$6.99, yeah, with a coupon code.
They're losing money?
Potentially.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So the whole thing is, when you look at what it costs Amazon to ship as a percent of their cost of doing business, the shipping costs are gigantic. So they may dispute the figures because they don't disclose them. But it's what I read, you know, in a deep research report on them is $7.50 approximately. So every time you're getting something that ships free, somehow, some way, they either have to lose money on you or embed it in the cost. Maybe not on that item, but in your overall experience. So going by rote to Amazon, if you're a convenience shopper and it doesn't matter, like Krista's husband, okay, before the Amazon Prime stuff, he always went to one of the chain drugstores and paid the highest prices imaginable on planet Earth, right?
Right. He used it as the grocery store because it was right around the corner from us.
So now that he uses Amazon, even if they're more expensive than other sources he could buy from, he's still spending a lot less money. So for him as a total convenient shopper, Amazon works out. But if you are price oriented, remember, no one place, no one source is going to be the cheapest. And if you tie both hands behind your back of defaulting automatically to Amazon, you will pay too much. Darren is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Darren.
Hey, Clark.
You have the good fortune that somebody's going to pay for your driving.
Yes, that is true there, Clark, and I appreciate you being able to take my call here.
Certainly.
Let me first give you a little bit of a background. I'm a family of four. My daughter's in her first year of college, and my son is a freshman in high school. My employer is offering me a company vehicle that can also be used for some personal use. My spouse is also permitted to drive the car. However, I am going to have to pay roughly around $160 a month, but that includes my gasoline, insurance, and maintenance. I currently have three cars, one a 1999 SUV that has 220,000 miles.
All right. Were you a math teacher at one time? You're setting this up like the math teachers do those word problems.
Well, it's a little bit of a complicated question. It seems easy on the surface, but when you look at it, it gets a little complicated.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. So the first car you mentioned is a 1999. Is that what you said?
Yeah, 1999 SUV. It's terrible gas mileage, but it's paid for, and I need it to pull a pop-up camper, an activity my family likes to do.
Okay.
I also have an 09 small car that's also paid for that my wife primarily uses. And I have a 2008 small car that my daughter uses, and we currently owe about $6,000 on the car. In the next 2 to 3 years, my son will also need a vehicle because that's what he's going to be expected to drive. So the question I have for you is, are we a four-car family today?
Yes.
My wife says no, but...
Yes, you are a four-car family. There's no upside to you selling any of the cars you described.
Okay.
The cost of having them is so low. You take the SUV completely depreciated out, 15 years old, an 09 and an 08, you've already been hit with the lion's share of depreciation on those. And I think it makes sense to keep the fleet that you have.
Although I'm paying $160 a month to use it, and I still have a car payment?
Yep.
That's what I'm struggling with there, Clark.
Yeah, but the $160, that's for an additional car that's the company car you're going to be given.
Mm-hmm.
And these cars that you have, you're not going to put meaningful miles on them. And normally, let's say you had said that you had a car that was in a position where it was it had not been through a full depreciation cycle. Even more, I would tell you to keep the car. You don't have, you have three cars with a sum total of debt against all three of $6,000. If you're going to sell any of them, you'd sell the 08 because it's got the loan.
Correct.
So I don't see a move to sell.
Okay. Well, you've settled World War III at my house, so I appreciate all your advice. Thank
so I missed what you said, though. Does that put me on your side or your wife's side?
I put you on my wife's side.
Well, as you know, your wife is always right.
That is correct, Clark.
Thank okay. you. Well, I hope you enjoy the company car. That's nearly free transportation. You have a new car, and you have to pay so little of the cost. John joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thank you. John, how can I serve you today?
Yes, sir. My wife has a little bit of school bill left, and we are teachers. And I was told by a friend that teachers that teach in either a public school, in a public school that is either for special needs or in low-income public school, qualify for either debt forgiveness or debt reduction when it comes to school bill. And I have Googled that, and I cannot find any more information about it.
Okay, that has been true. There was a change in the law last year that I don't know that it eliminated that program, but it's an obscure one. It is a program that has designated school districts. There's a list of schools that are eligible for the loan forgiveness for having taught in the schools, gosh, I feel like it was 5 years maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Teacher Loan Forgiveness Program. And
okay.
So there are certain eligibility requirements that allow you for the forgiveness for the low-income school, and there is an online database that you can see if the school that your wife teaches at is an eligible institution. There's a special teacher loan forgiveness application, and I can give you a web address to look for the information specifically on the teacher forgiveness program, teacher loan okay. forgiveness program. Would that help
great.
You?
Yes, sir. That'd be great.
Okay. So if you go to studentaid.ed.gov.
Studentaid.ed.gov.
Yeah. And one of the briefings there is specifically on the teacher forgiveness program.
Okay.
And it's right. the slug on it, the headline on it of the section is teacher loan forgiveness. And it goes through what are the requirements and how the cancellation of the loans works.
Okay.
There cool. is also, if she is not eligible under that program, the new program that went into effect in the last year allows for forgiveness for people in eligible professions, of which teaching at just about any school you're eligible allows for a very low loan repayment amount each month with forgiveness of all remaining balance after 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
So there's actually more than one option.
Okay. And where would the information be about that second option?
The place I find that's easiest to read about pay-as-you-earn is a website called... I just gave that website a couple of days ago. IBRinfo.org.
IBR?
Yeah, for income-based repayment. IBRinfo.org.
Okay, cool. All right, well, thanks. I appreciate it, Clark. That's a big help. It kind of points me in the right direction.
Well, I hope that I haven't hit you with two dead ends, and I've given you something that's a nice highway to figuring out how to get it done for your wife. Our number on the Clark Howard Show is 877-87-CLARK, but right now we're turning to our Ask Clark, where you can post a question for me at Clark.com. Joel, who asked an Ask Clark?
Yeah, Clark, this one's from Roger. He followed up on Darren's question about keeping those cars. He says, what is the best way to actually sell my old car, Clark?
Well, best is a term that's hard to get my arms around, because if you want the most money for a used car, you will sell it on your own. You'll post an ad through something like Auto Trader or eBay Motors, or if you really are courageous, you'll post an ad for free on Craigslist and you get the car sold. You'll have a lot of people who will say they're going to show up who don't. You'll have people who come and kick your tires and then don't buy. In other words, you get to find out what it's like to be a used car salesman. But if you sell it on your own, you will make more money. Typically, somewhere, depending on the age and condition of the car, you'll make somewhere $1,500 to $2,500 more selling the car on your own than you would just trading it in. But today, not as much as a year ago or 2 years ago, you're not going to get as much money doing this, but you can go to the used car manager of a new car dealer for your brand, and they love having new inventory to have on the lots. They really, really loved it for a couple of years. Now they just love it. And so I think it's a great idea to take your car to CarMax if you have one in your area, and at least two dealers that sell your make and model, because they're your best target to want to pay you meaningful money for your used car to be on their lots. Now, if you sell to CarMax, you sell to a branded dealer of your brand, you will not get the money potentially that you would get selling it on your own. But you eliminate all the hassle of what's involved in trying to sell a car, because let me tell you, it is a tough, tough thing. Be realistic about the price you put on the car and get the car looking really good. If you're a little bit sloppy, have it detailed. If there's dents and the car's not too old, get them fixed. It'll get you more money for the car. Jonathan, you would like to get more control of your budgeting, and you want to get a yes or no from me on what website?
I was looking at mint.com.
It seems too good to be true, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
It is true, though. It's the real deal. Have you played around with any of the tools on it yet, or are you afraid to even go that far?
I was afraid to go that far because it was asking for username and passwords for my bank account and credit cards.
Yeah, and that's something that freaks people out, because Mint.com uses something called screen scraper technology, where mm-hmm. you give it your username and password information for a bank account, credit cards, if you have a brokerage account or mutual fund account, you give them all that, and that's how they give you up-to-the-minute information about how you're doing financially. Are you meeting your goals? If you're not meeting your goals, what you should be doing. And it is completely free and completely legit. With all the cracks in so many organizations with hackers breaking in, knock on wood, nothing has happened like that with Mint. And I think it's worth the risk, because the budgeting tools and the constant feedback are so good.
I'll definitely give it a shot. But yeah, it was the safety thing was my biggest issue.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because right on their front screen now, I just pulled it up while we're talking, says learn more about security, and it wants you to put your mind at rest, at ease, about the security standards that they follow. Nothing's perfect, though.
Thanks for listening to the Clark Howard Podcast. Download new episodes every Monday through Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.